Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
I just absolutely love that music. It is just so lifting.
Well, let it play some more.
Can you name the band?
No, but I will tell you, I feel lifted.
You look lifted. That, my boy, is Jefferson Airplane from 1967 album called Surrealistic Pillow.
Wow.
The name of the tune is called Embryonic Journey.
Very nice.
It's really a great opening tune for this show.
It is.
It is.
Did they give you permission?
Of course.
Oh, okay.
No, but they pay copyrights here. Okay, here we go. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christini, your host in studio tonight with Mr. Russ Avison, who has done traveling for a while, I hope.
Oh, man.
I mean, the guy was, like, thrown out of his house.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He
10
was
days.
In the fire, yeah.
10 days.
Yeah.
It was pretty scary.
Yeah.
But other than kind of a smoky smell, everything survived.
Excellent.
Yes, we're back in business.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Let's get right into it, because this author we have on tonight is, like, really, really hot. He's good, man. He is excellent. Okay, the writer's block. What is his name? Yeah, the writer's block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing. Shit. Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books. And this kind of like, so you've written your first novel, and what do you do now? I mean, where do you go from here? So this is kind of how we do it. Tuscany Bay Books and Black Dog Publishing are in business to help the new writers kind of wind their way through the publishing quagmire. We're a small company, and we do individual stuff. We do we work with you from start to finish, and at the end of this whole sojourn, you get a published piece that you can put on your shelf or you can give to your friends, which most everybody does, or go to book signings and sell them and put a little money in your pocket. So the number you can give us a call at is 805-795-3165, or you can email me at jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or R. Palinelli, and that is Palinelli, at tuscanybaybooks.com. And we'll be happy to get back to you and help you kind of walk through this. Also, we're sponsored by Out West, which is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian lifestyle. And shop for unique and distinctive apparel, boots, hats, fashion accessories, home decor, books, music, and just about everything else. National brands include Scully Leather and Rockmount Ranchwear, Dan Post Boots, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. Their toll-free number is 877-340-9378. And if you shop at, you can go shop online at www.scvoutwest.com. And go there and...
I'm going right now.
I am absolutely just right now. I'm having a brain fart. Yeah. Enter the code WB100 and you get $10 off your order.
$50 sounded better.
I was screwed up. Sorry, Bobby Jean. $10 off your initial order. And for 10 years, since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM Truckload. That's the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they strive to make your full truckload shipping experience unparalleled. Call TFM Truckload today at 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski or any of the fine Target TFM staff. Tell them you heard it here in the writer's block, and they'll have something a little special for you. And if you are an LTL shipper, getting your freight moved your way, the most expedient way possible is what you need. One-stop shop, no hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized traffic movement program is the finest in the industry. bar none. So call it 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. You won't be sorry you did. No fooling. They're really, really, really good people there. Okay. Tonight's guest, a gentleman that lives in beautiful downtown Seattle. We say that because he doesn't want anybody visiting him. He actually lives in Port Townsend. But there you go, Eric. I blew your cover. Eric is a his name is Eric C. Anderson. He is he's such prolific. He's done just about everything. The guy spent years in government service. He's worked with the CIA, and he's worked, I mean, he's this multinational forces, Iraq, Baghdad, command in Hawaii, active duty intelligence officer in the United States Air Force, assignments in Japan, Korea, Saudi Arabia. He also taught for the University of Missouri, University of Maryland, and the Air Force Academy. Mr. Anderson has a PhD in political science from the University of Missouri, an MA from Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and a BA from Illinois Wesleyan University. He is also a graduate of the Air Command and Staff College and the Air War College.
Jeez.
It's no wonder that...
we're going to have to extend the show a little bit longer just so we can fit it all
I know, huh? If this is you, Bob, calling in, Bobby Jean, call me back in a little bit. A longtime Harley rider, Mr. Anderson claims to have put over 300,000 miles on motorcycles during the last 30 years and has lost track of his time afloat on a variety of sailboats. If you want to call in tonight and talk to Mr. Anderson, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That number again is 818-602-4929. And without anything further ado, let's bring Mr. Anderson into the show. Eric, you with us?
Jim, Russ, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Oh, we are so glad to have you. Having just finished,
you make me sound more important than I really am.
Well, you know, the deal is
a human being who keeps trundling along.
Yeah, the deal is, Eric, when we ask you to write your bio, we read what you write. So if you want to lie, go ahead, but your friends will find out.
Yeah. My friends know.
Well, I'm sure. You know, I actually went to high school with a guy named Eric Anderson that lives up in the Seattle area. Actually, I think his name was Eric C. Anderson. I don't believe you're the same one, though.
That would be something.
No, my parents weren't very original. We kind of all got the same name, and so occasionally I have to do the, no, I'm not that one.
I think
a little discretion. I'm moving back and forth.
Unless you went to high school in San Diego and Encinitas, then you're not the same one.
I did not.
Okay, then you're not the same one. All righty. Then your ex-wife does not live in Oak Harbor.
No.
She may, but...
Down over here. She lives in Washington, D.C., so I'm safe.
Oh, good.
But I moved to the other coast.
Good for you. Let's get into this book, because Russ and I have both read it, and I have to tell you, I've never been so tired reading a book in my life. The story is phenomenal. The everything about this book is great. It's just it's really hard for us lay people to keep up with the fricks and
all the acronyms,
and the
different factions that are over. Oh, it was crazy.
Oh my God! And I'm sitting here reading your bio and I say, well, no wonder you know all this stuff. You know, we don't.
And I have to remember when I'm sitting down to write that you have to provide a definition for who all these organizations are, and so that's why there actually is in the back of the book glossary. So we're trying to hope that
yes, there was
find the answers to what there is.
Except I did catch you on one.
The problem is that you have this complication amongst the organizations that are the moving pieces within our government and within the other governments who are participating in this campaign to try to deal with the Islamic State.
Right.
And it's hard to get people to understand that you have to know who these moving pieces are. And I always apologize for throwing all that at you. But I figure that when you get to book two, you've learned them all by now and you're ready to go.
Okay.
So that's what we chase.
We have just established this is a part of a three-book set. It is the first novel in... three, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, it goes on from here, which is a good thing, because it didn't end very nicely.
No. In, you know, my conversation that I'm trying to have with people, and I I do this when I'm talking with folks who are looking at this book, and I said, so remember that the Prophet Muhammad pulls off sort of his own religious campaign in 6030 A.D.
Right.
And by 750 A.D. has made his way, his admirers have made his way, their way all the way to Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And that is truly amazing. I mean, you know, what took the Christians 1,000 years to accomplish, these guys pull off in 120 years.
Right.
And what we're doing with the trilogy that you have here is we're marching people forward from essentially here's the revival of the Islamic State. Al-Baghdadi, who's the self-proclaimed caliphate, puts himself into, all the way across, and as we march our way through, here's how that process operates.
Mm-hmm.
And the opening scene for almost anyone who's going into an environment like this is, how do I shock readers into realizing this is very bad? And what I've done for you is put you in a situation where it's very bad.
Well, yeah, you can't get much worse than that.
That's where you're sitting in Baghdad when I open up that book, and it's from my own personal experiences as to just how uncomfortable this can become.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea of where we're going with the book as it goes along. And it gets, unfortunately, as Adam Dunn will tell you, I work with Adam Dunn at Dunn Publishing, is that you try to make this so dissettling that you actually want to pick up and turn the next page.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've done here, is to say, you know, here's what you think is going to transpire, but watch what else can happen to you as you move along.
Well, you managed. I found it amazing I don't know what the Islamic State, I guess the extremists, and the people in the Mideast refer to us as Romans. I found that interesting.
Yes.
Is that actually true? They do that?
Yes, he does. Al-Baghdadi goes by, he calls himself Caliph Ibrahim. And he does refer to the apostates, not the Shia, but the Westerners, the people of the book, which is the way that the Islamic faith refers to Christians. We are not considered outcast or something evil, but we are the people of the book and considered equivalents. Mm-hmm. But we are called the Romans, and that's the way that he refers to us. And so it makes for an interesting conversation.
Well, it did. Because that was one of the signals that I picked up on, and as I went through, every time he mentioned the Romans, I said, "Aha! They're talking about us again." So, I mean, not the real Romans, but the fake Romans,
the Romans.
People of the book.
You know, the goal that I tell people is that we all chuckle about, because I think we've all probably read the 50 Shades of Grey. Here's the problem.
Not me.
We don't have 50 Shades of Grey here. We have 1,000 Shades
sure,
of Grey.
Sure.
And there isn't a right or wrong in this process. My Islamic friends are no less insulted with some of the work I do than are my Christian friends. And I said, that's the objective.
Uh-huh.
I want you to have to actually sit down and think about how both sides are processing the information that's coming at them.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes fast. And it comes in a manner where you have to make sometimes unequivocal decisions that are going to cause a lot of death as you meander through. And that was the intention with where we were headed on that.
Well, I mean, having been in the military, I get the fact that as somebody made a comment in the book, and I don't recall the name of the character, but he made a comment that was, I think it was the major that was of Mideastern descent.
Major Fahim.
There you go. And he said, well, you know, he was talking to some guy in Washington, and he just got all pissed off, and he said, you know, these people take forever to make a decision, and we're in the field, and we need it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how true is that? You know, everybody gets pissed hangs up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Having sat in Baghdad, you know, I was the first senior intelligence officer that went into Baghdad in 2004, 2005. And when we went in and had conversations with the commanding officers, you had this question that said, you know, I don't have time for you guys to argue over the semantics. Just give me an answer.
Right.
I want the answer. And this is where Fahim finds himself stuck
right.
in this book. And certainly, you know, if you're an action officer, and I spend a lot of time in the field with these guys, you look at them and you go, you know, you've earned my sympathy, because while I could sit there and sort of think through the answers, you want it in the next 15 seconds.
Sure.
Because you have to shoot somebody. And that really becomes a new way of thinking through your processes, and I hope transpires into the way that I write.
Well, I mean, it came out, and I was appreciative of and I have to tell you that I really love the curmudgeon Marine Sergeant Major that just didn't talk to anybody, and I just loved him. He just was great, because I used to have first sergeants yep. like that, so, you know, it's just like, oh, wow,
yeah,
old home week.
If you've served in military service, you've had Sergeant Major Moore working behind your back on more than one occasion, and they just look at you and shake their head and go, nah,
oh, yeah.
you don't know what's going on.
But I really appreciated his expertise and confidence in what he did.
Oh,
there
yeah,
was no
absolutely.
Question. He knew what, when, how, where, why, everything was going to happen.
Right.
And there was no question in his decision-making processes.
Yeah, it was yeah, amazing that when the major mentioned something, he turned around to the back of the people in the back of the truck and said, "Okay, blah, 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 blah."
Yeah,
and the major's going, "Whoa!"
I've had the privilege of working with people like Sergeant Major Moore, who I go, "This is, you know, when you're a junior officer, they tell you, you know, the first thing that you want to do is go into the field, find a E5, E6, who's been working with the military for the last 10 years, and go tie yourself onto them and
right.
listen
right.
and see what they have to say.
Right.
And the next thing you know is that you're actually learning things as opposed to what they wanted to teach you in school. Now you're learning how the operation actually gets accomplished. And
right.
that's what Moore does for Fahim, is that he brings him through that process and says, here's how you get from sitting out at a camp out in the middle of nowhere into the middle of Baghdad and into yourself in a firefight that you have to escape from in order to leave alive.
Well, he certainly didn't waste any time calling in for permission to open fire.
I have to admit, neither did we.
I don't think anybody ever did.
okay, so I'm going to call in the fire coordinates. Here's the UTMs for what I need. Now let's drop artillery.
Sure.
And then you realize after, you know, about 15 minutes, you went, wait a minute, I wonder if there's anybody else out here. I hope not, because, you know, it's now raining things that are not very healthy for you, but it was very successful in accomplishing it.
It was also interesting. I've never been in the military, but they were talking about the different factions and how they bring death, basically. And mm-hmm. the United States brings death from the sky.
Right.
And that we have very few people on the ground, and everything just rains down from the sky. Whoop, you all right there?
No, we're fine. The
answer on that is
we have transferred ourselves to a force that operates from operating on the ground, and we put a minimal footprint on the ground. I think we have 5,000 people in Iraq right now, to a force that operates flying from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
We do it remote control. And if you think about it, the guys who are flying the drones that we're operating with these days are working either out of an air base that's just north of Nellis Air Force Base
right.
in
Las Vegas,
Nevada.
Yeah.
Or you're working out of Idaho. And you're pulling off a stunt that nobody could imagine, literally couldn't imagine 20 years ago. And they do it in a very sterile environment. And if you go back and you watch, I think that it's probably an old MASH episode that I watched at one point. There's a pilot who shot down, and he realizes that there's actually travesty happening on the ground, you know, because his environment and his picture of the war was fly out of Japan, come over, drop your bombs, and fly back to Japan. so you went home to your family. Mm-hmm. And these guys spend 8 hours driving a drone out of the middle of nowhere that they've never seen the train.
Right.
And then they are willing to actually carry out strikes on people that they've never met, they have no contact with, and when they're done, they bring the drone back home, and if they land it successfully, get a pat on the back, and they go home for the day. And so it's a very different way of conducting war, mm-hmm. And it's very, very strange. You know, when I talk to my friends who are in Iraq, and my friends are still in Syria, and they say, you know, the perception is that the Americans have turned war into a sterile environment. And that's something that doesn't transpire if you're the person who's sitting there on the ground, and hence we have the refugee crisis that the Europeans are trying to deal with, that you know we have nominally tried to incorporate, and that the Canadians said what are trying to solve. And you have hundreds of thousands of people who are fleeing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just the adversary, but right. We are also participating.
Right. And there was you made an observation in there that I guess Islamic State, is that what they prefer to be called?
Yes.
Okay. When they do a raid, they go in into a village and they raid the village and then they leave, and then 10 minutes later they come back and they do the same thing again and they just finish the job. And it's like I think it's almost like they want to wait for people to come out of their hidey holes to get the rest of them while they're there. And the comment that the leader said was that you could teach anybody, even a bumpkin from the country, to read 10 minutes on a clock or a watch. And it's easy to teach them how to pull the trigger.
You know, the interesting thing that I found, and this is my own personal experience, and I will tell you, some of my friends will tell you, say the same thing, is that you can walk through in your instant terror inside of environment. So people go into hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you walk out the back door, and you think about this in an old Western sense, you know, you walk through the gates of Old Tombstone and you come back out and you leave. And the thought is, well, if I stick my head up in about 10 minutes, it'll all be good.
Right.
And if you turn around and come back in, it all is not good at that point.
Right.
Because now you've exposed your hiding places.
Right.
And that's the lesson that they were teaching as they went along in this process. And it's very much the way the Islamic State works. I mean, if you watch what's happening now in Iraq and in Syria, you know, we have declared, the Iraqis have declared, we have victory in our time. I mean, this is really, in some ways, I have this nightmare of the Bush presidency standing on the aircraft carrier with the mission banner.
Mission accomplished, yeah.
Mission accomplished banner. And you go, mission accomplished. The problem is, these guys, yes, you're right, we drove them to ground in the sense that they don't occupy territory, but what they have done in a more frightening manner is that they've recruited a number of young people in this country and certainly elsewhere in the international community who are just simply waiting, and we know this, it's been reported in the New York Times, are simply waiting to be signaled to go to war.
Mm-hmm.
And here's your mission. And we saw that today with what happened in Afghanistan and the attack that occurred in Afghanistan. And you're going to see it again and again and again. And it just means that what we thought we've defeated has simply become a cancer that has spread itself across much broader canvas.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is that it's not just one kind of cancer. There are so many factions with so many different agendas that they're trying to promote there. And it's like when this the attack happened today, like they're waiting to see who's going to claim responsibility. Well, was it these guys or was it these guys or were those guys over there? Because everybody's got their different idea of what they want to promote.
Right.
And it's chaos.
Well, yeah, it is. It's
you know, the sad part of that conversation, if you think about the Islamic world, so you have within the Islamic world, and much like we have with the Christian world, you have the Catholics and the Protestants. Well, within the Islamic world, we have the Sunni and the Shia. And the Sunni are the dominant, predominant force. And what they are doing is picking off, this is what the Islamic State keeps claiming credit for, is that they're more than willing not to kill the Western apostate, but they're willing to kill fellow Muslims. And so they're targeting the Shia. And it's a sad statement. I tell people, you know, harken back to the Hundred Years' War. This is where we're at now with where the Islamic faith has arrived, and this is what the Islamic State is doing. And it creates just a nightmare for both the political leadership and the military leadership. How do you try to dictate who belongs where?
Mm-hmm.
But also, isn't there, you know, even if you figure it out, how do you fight an enemy that has nothing to lose? They don't care.
Yeah, that has been a question I've been asked on a number of occasions, and it says, you know, the issue is you want to be able to take away the message, not the messenger, but the message. And that turns it into, and the Islamic State has become pretty good at this. It becomes into the means of delivering that message, and they have gone cyber, and they're actually fairly sophisticated at it. And we're watching this process of delivering out a recruit to the jihad that says, "Here's what we're going to do." And the message that they're proliferating, and I try to get this across to Western audiences, is that, you know, the Chinese refer to their 100 years of humiliation, mm-hmm. from 1835, the Opium Wars, up until 1949 when Mao takes over China. Right. What you have within the Arab world is the Crusades to present day. So from 1035 to the present time period. So you have 1,000 years of shame that people are now willing to take on and say, you know, we're going to rectify this. Mm. And we're going to clean it up, and we're going to turn it into something that we can be proud of as members of the Islamic faith. And in many cases, it's not just members of the Islamic faith, but as members of the Arab community. And so you've got two drawing forces that are bringing people into it.
It's in the middle of all this craziness, you throw an American that calls himself Odin, and he's a cyber geek, and he's technology freak, and he puts another spin on this whole story about that he is helping a country, I don't know if I should name it or not, because it still is, you know, steal money. And
think about where warfare has gone. We've been trained. People of my generation, I'm in my mid-50s, but if you think about the way we were taught warfare, it was a very kinetic event. You went out and you shot somebody, you blew somebody up. And the kids today, it isn't about shooting somebody, it's about turning something off or stealing something and then using it against them.
Sure.
And what Odin does is brings us into the modern warfare environment, and this is where I'm going. The next book I'm working on is called Byte, B-Y-T.
Okay. Oh, very good. Okay.
And so you're looking at the way that you use cyber warfare, only instead of trying to convince people that we're stealing information or we're going to take your social security number away from you, I could care less.
Uh-huh.
What I'm more interested in doing is manipulating the information flow and the cash flow. And this is where Odin comes in and goes, wait a minute, we can take money away from people, and that will transform governments faster than it will if you go in and say, well, I just stole 40 million identities. Stealing 40 million identities, as we know in this country from dealing with Yahoo and dealing with some of the other these corporations, has not changed a thing in the way that we do governance. But if you take the money away, things start to rapidly transpire. And this is where Odin comes into the conversation. And what we've done with him is go to work with the Qatari government, who has been doing very much the same thing. If you think of what the Qataris have done, they set up Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera is a counter-messaging service. In this country now, we've turned it into fake news. I don't know if the Al Jazeera is fake news, but they have a message very much like NBC would have a message or CBS would have a message. There's an editorial background. And this is what Al Jazeera is doing. And so Odin plugs into that environment and is then available to say, here's how I use cyber to change the conversation. And it does dramatically change conversations.
Well, you have such a large pod of people that are just extremely, extremely interesting in this book. And I need to take a minute here and do a little selling on a facility over in Fillmore. So stick with us. Don't go away. And we'll be back to you in about 30 seconds.
Will do.
Okay. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you're going away for one or two nights or get away for an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? Well, the answer is simple. The dogs. Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. And yes, he will.
Oof.
And here is the owner of All Dogs Rule right here sitting in the studio looking at me across the maze of crap I have sitting here.
You know, we have a lot of stuff on these desks. Plus this microphone, I mean.
Yeah, I know. It's big.
It's big. I don't want to get too graphic, but it's basically a big phallus sitting in front of me here.
It is.
Right off, it is.
It is. I love it.
And I'm glad you haven't taken any pictures.
I have not. I do actually have one with you with your mouth right on it. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Okay, the time is now 7:31. We're going to return to our conversation with Mr. Eric Anderson, the writer of just a criminally insane book called Osiris about the Mideast. And Eric, you back with us?
I am indeed.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about where the idea for this book came from. Is any of this true?
Unfortunately, yes. And if you think about what I started with on the premise of, you know, what has become of what we called the state of Iraq and what actually now exists, and I think it's fair to argue that the Iraqis have by fault trifurcated into something that looks like the Kurdistan, and then there's Al-Anbar, which has become very much a Sunni province, and then you have what's left that the Shia own, to include Baghdad. This is sort of the outset, and I've spent a lot of time in the territory, so I know a little bit more about it than I care to admit. And you watch what's taking place there, and where I come up with the premise and the destructive power that's involved is not new. If you go back in time, in the mid-1980s, unfortunately, in Brazil, they had a case where there was medical equipment that was being disassembled and the children walked off with the plutonium that was resident within the imaging machines.
Mm.
And there were a number of poisoning cases. And so we've known, that this is a potential that could be accomplished. And you don't need a nuclear detonation. What you need to do is disseminate the neutrons. And once you spread that, you've got a poison environment that people can't really operate within for very long and don't really know how to operate within very long. And mm-hmm. The military is not equipped to do it. And so you've set the stage for a disaster. And that's what I've done with Osiris.
Mm-hmm. Is it? Golly, I hate to say this. Our current government, as it is, are they paving the way even faster? Do you think?
What discourages me with our current government is that, you know, I'll take the case in. You can throw blame at me, but by deciding that we were going to move our embassy to Jerusalem,
right,
as opposed to leaving in Tel Aviv with everybody else, you inflame emotions.
Right.
And when you inflame emotions, you cause people to do things that they otherwise would not. And it's not fair to say that it's reasonable or rational but you've inflamed that emotion and they're going to respond in kind. And they're going to find a way that gets our attention. And there's a book by Robert Pate called Dying in the Name of Democracy. And he goes through a study. He's a scholar at the University of Chicago. Goes through a study of why people commit suicide attacks, particularly suicide attacks against democracies. And what turns out to be the case is that they're going after governments that are far more capable than they would be to inflict military harm, but they are unwilling to accept the social consequences of doing so. Mm. And so if you're willing to die in the name of democracy, or willing to die in the name of your faith, it causes shock to the population who's trying to inflict that damage. And this is what we have transpiring within the Islamic State, and one that has not registered within the American military forces. I think that's a fair case to make. Certainly has not registered within the current government. That here are people who are willing to die because they believe they're working in a righteous cause, and they understand that what's going to happen if they commit this act is going to be so shocking to the people sitting on the other side that it will change the direction of a governance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm absolutely stunned. I'm sitting here stunned. And Russ doesn't see me stunned very often.
No,
so.
No.
So this story came, the actual story itself, it's like you have several governments in here. You have, of course, the United States. Then you have Turkey that's thrown into the mix. And then Qatar, which is also thrown into the mix. And everybody's trying, it's almost like everybody wants to be the boss, but nobody really knows how to do it. Am I close?
No, you're right on the mark. And what I do... And you'll see this continue. Adam, who's the publisher, he was reading, and he had his attorney reading the second book, and he goes, you know, I picked it up on Saturday, and I put it down on Sunday morning at about 2 o'clock when my wife was angry at me. I said, you know, the conversation that's happening here is one that Americans aren't accustomed to, and that is you have a competition to reestablish a new caliphate within the Middle East.
Right.
And if you pull up, and I encourage readers to do this, I said, so pull up the map of the Holy Roman Empire, the Roman Empire. And you look at what the Roman Empire accomplished for territorial gain. And then you look at what the first caliphate pulls off. So in the days after the Prophet Muhammad, and where they go in taking over territory, and then you look up where the Ottoman Empire went to, if that doesn't give you shivers, you're not paying attention to history.
Hmm.
And this is exactly where these guys are headed, is down the same path. And it's a matter of how do you accomplish it. You know, we're used to conquests that take 50 years, 60 years, 100 years, 1,000 years sometimes. I mean, it's how long it took the Christians to take over the same territory.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are going to try to pull it off in 20 years. And you should be sitting there and saying, now I'm uncomfortable. I'm worried about where this is headed next. And that was what caused me to push the story forward.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that I say that, the reason I went to work for CIA was that they asked me to work for the Red Cell. And the Red Cell is an organization within CIA. They employ people from across the government spectrum. So a couple of my counterparts were from NSA, one was from DIA, another was from I'm losing my mind on this one, where we do our medical testing up in Fort Detrick, thank you. And so you had this accumulation of six senior people in the government who sat there, and what we did was we didn't take intelligence and purposely turn it on its head, but we said, here's the mainstream line and thought process. What happens if it goes 90 degrees off from that?
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful place to sit and do the process, because we were publishing this in the presidential day briefing on a regular basis, and you'd get more questions on the White House as to, you know, who came up with this. And he said, well, you know, I was looking at it, and I spent a whole lot of time reading history and going through the various news reporting, and this is where I took the intelligence reporting and where I took the storyline. And that's where we're going with Osiris and Anubis and Horus. That trilogy is intended to say, here's what happens if history takes a 90-degree turn on.
Interesting. Well, let's talk a little bit now about when you write. Where do you sit to get more comfortable to write? Do your writing from?
So I built my own office. You're right. You divulge where I hide. I live up in Port Townsend.
Yeah. Right.
But I live off at the far end of the Olympic Peninsula. And I've got an office that is my book line shelves, and then I've got three computers that run. So I've run one of them, and I run a big screen television so that I can do research out of it because I'm old and I can't see well, one that I write on. And the third that I use so that I can go play on the Onion router. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Onion router, but that's the dark web. So instead of just looking at sort of the conventional thought and what's taking place, let's go see what's going on within the hacker community and the folks who are selling illegal products and trying to actually carry on transactions behind the doors that right. normally you wouldn't see on the internet. And you use that as a feed that goes through. And for me, that's a, you know, great, here we are. Now, I have to tell people, and I'm brutally honest with this, and I taught for a while, so you can use this against me, but I don't write with an outline. There's a storyline that I see in between my ears. I know where I want to arrive, and it's a matter of what have I encountered as I go through and what's the data that goes back and forth that makes a story flow and gives the reader some insight into here's the various tales that are taking place as you go down that line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to teach. I mean, I've taught a number of creative writing courses, and you get people who will ask, you know, I put a whole script together. No, I have to be brutally honest. This is where I start.
Ah.
But when I start the story, and I was working with my sister-in-law who also writes, and I said, you know, when you're doing it, so you write the prologue, and I'm a very traditional person for this. I always have a prologue and an epilogue.
Right, right.
I said, so I write the prologue, then I write the preces, and then I sell the book.
Ah. Eric, I have to stop you right there. I've got a call coming in. I have a call coming in to talk to you.
Okay.
So hang tough. This is the Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to? Hello? Well,
hello.
Oh, hey.
Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Hey,
hi, Henry.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you? Well, you're on with Eric Anderson.
Outstanding, Eric. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh well. Good. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm on the road from Ventura, so I haven't been able to hear the show. So.
No worries. Can you call in next week, Henry? Because Eric is just like, he's filling us full of really good stuff.
You bet. I'll call back this time, 7 days from now.
You're the man. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Eric, Henry is our roving reporter. He's
roving in Ventura right now.
Yeah, right now he's apparently roving in Ventura. So, anyway, considering the name of this program is The Writer's Block, have you ever had that? Considering you do not use an outline, and I don't either, actually, have you ever had Writer's Block hit you?
So I'm going to make somebody feel bad, I'm certain, but
okay.
No. You know what I run into? I run out of time.
Ah.
I have fallen asleep on a keyboard more than once. I once woke
wow.
up and the screen was filled all the way down with the letter E. My finger had fallen on there and I and it saved all the way down through like 10,000 letter E.
Oh my God.
I have this conversation with my father. My father's hard of hearing, and he says, you know, because I work as a general contractor, it's what I like to do on the side. And he says, you know, aren't you afraid of losing your hearing? And I said, in your generation, my father's 77, I said, in your generation, losing your hearing was a bad thing because you had conversations with people that were a verbal exchange of thoughts and processes. I said, in my generation, and I was an early programmer, I said, most of my conversation takes place on a screen. So if I want to have that give and take, a lot of it is done just in email and back and forth.
Sure.
And I tell people, if you want to understand sort of the extent to which that works into your thinking process as a writer, you should go back and pick up when Hunter S. Thompson published his letters. Not his books, but his letters. And you can find them for sale. They're still online, I think. He did, I think, 3 volumes. Hunter's conversation on the typewriter with his friends was far more extensive than was the conversation that took place in the novels that we all are familiar with. And that I think is the way that a writer operates, is mm-hmm. that you learn to have this conversation kind of with yourself, mm-hmm. but in a long distance format. Mm-hmm. It says, you know, here's the exchange of ideas that are go back and forth. And I can't strongly encourage people enough to go look at, because Hunter had he developed this reputation that, you know, we all laugh about. But if you look at the letters, you go, oh my God, you know, this guy was far more literate than we realized, and certainly far more educated than we realized, and he had this back and forth that transpires, and that's what I encourage writers to do.
Well, good. You know, we're gonna have to call it quits with you here. We're out of time, and it's been great having you on this show. I'm enthralled. Absolutely enthralled.
Well, thank you very much.
And I'm ready for the next
book.
I'm
glad to be here.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Bite when it comes out. And
Well, look for Anibus. That'll be the next one.
Okay.
And can I put in a shameless plug here?
Absolutely. You know, we go for shameless self-promotion, so go ahead.
Well, I'm going to put in a shameless plug, so I would encourage your listeners to go look up Dunn Books, D-U-N-N mm-hmm. Books. .com.
Okay.
And Adam is the publisher there, and we're putting together a new publishing firm that is pushing forward this idea of doing what we're calling the new noir. And this is where we're headed, is taking these storylines and pushing them forward to say, you've got to be thinking about these problem sets.
Well, you've got us thinking about them. I can tell you that. You want to give everybody your email address and where they can find your books, and because I know you've written more than
one. You can find me on Amazon. I don't give out my email address. You can find me on Amazon. It's Osiris, a novel, and it's also available on Barnes.
Okay.
And so you can go through both of those.
Okay. You have a Facebook page?
If people want to get hold of me, they can work through you and through Adam.
Absolutely. It works for me.
And listen, you don't have to worry about, you can give your email address because we've already given out your phone number.
Yeah. No. Hey, look, get a hold of the bookie. Get a hold of Jerry, who is our booker. Make sure that you tell her that you know, of course, she's listening to the show. Send her a request that when your new book comes out, your number 2, that you want to be back on the show, and that's going to be towards the end of next year. But that's, you know.
I'd love to do it. It should be out in March.
Okay. Oh, excellent.
3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're booked up right now through April. So, but at any rate, and it's a go send an email to guestwb@yahoo.com and she'll get all that information to you. Enjoy that coffee mug, my friend.
Hey, thank you very much, guys. Have
okay.
a good evening.
Hey, Eric, you do as well. Thanks,
take
Eric.
Care.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Gosh, full of information.
I know, but you know, I like the concept of what they're doing, because he's creating this publishing entity that is, because I felt that when I read this book that he had an agenda he wanted to push forward.
Absolutely.
And that's what they're trying to do with that the publishing group. So I think this is going to be very interesting.
It is going to be really interesting.
Next time we should call him out and we'll discuss specifics about our present administration.
We'll save a half an hour just to talk about the present administration.
Yes.
Okay, this is the last show for 2017. Next week, of course, is January 4th, and that will be our beginning show. We're rolling up into 3 years now here, Russ.
Woo!
I know, huh?
Yeah.
And Bobby Jean, if that was you calling in earlier, and I believe it probably was with a 661 number, I'm terribly sorry. You should have called back. You would have been as fascinated as we were. I'm sure you're probably listening anyway. Next week, on January 4th, we have Mr. Rick Ferguson on. Of course, Bobby Jean will be on the phone, and
Richard
will be in studio.
I know where your brain's going.
My brain is just so full of crap right now. And the name of Rick's book is Preserve and Defend, and it's all 812 pages of wonderfulness. So we'll get into that this week. And Russ, always a pleasure having you here, my friend.
Thank you very much.
And I'm just glad you're back in your house.
Me too.
Even though you didn't tell him to do what I told you to do, which is set the back fire in your living room.
I know. I was hoping.
Okay, for all the right people here at the Writer's Block, that includes the bookie and of course Bobby Jean and Richard and Russ and myself. Another Thursday is shot in the butt. We'll be here next Thursday, January 4th.
And Happy New Year.
And a Happy New Year to everybody. And, of course, tomorrow is happy birthday to me.
Yay.
Okay, we are done with another Thursday, and we are out of here.